welcome back to the Hi-Fi Podcast with Darren and Duncan, and I'm Darren.
I'm Duncan.
Today we're going to be talking about ground loops, everything about ground loops.
Yeah.
How to kill them, what they are.
Demons.
They are demons.
Squash them.
They are.
We'll help you perform an exorcist if necessary.
Yep.
Get that ground loop out.
So, like always, we like to start about talking about our audio systems and what's going on with those. And so, Duncan, what's the newest news in your audio system? I could tell you right now, but I'm going to let you explain.
I'm so excited, actually, but I want you to talk a little bit because you came over. And I think it had been a while since you had heard where my system was. And so we'll get your reaction in a minute. But I have been doing a couple things. I mentioned two of them that I did in last week's segment of what's been going on with me, and talking about bringing in this Voodoo cables, Thunder Dragon power cable.
Voodoo cable?
Voodoo. Oh, yeah.
I'm suspicious already.
Yeah, well, it's not... Yeah, it's not like... they're not called snaky audio cables, but... It's some voodoo, I'll tell you that. Anyway.
Snake Oil Incorporated?
It was just a random cable that I found at work that I just felt like bringing home, see kind of what it sounded like and that kind of thing. And so I've been spending a little time with that. I also mentioned that I had updated the connector on the power cable, my DIY power cable that goes in my amp. But what I did yesterday made a bigger difference than a lot of stuff that I've done recently. And I don't remember how this came to me. I was thinking about it. This cable design that I've been working on, and it's really focused on noise reduction. And the way that it goes about that is a helical kind of, you know, configuration of cables that kind of keeps them apart from each other, keeps them at close to 90 degree angles, as close as possible, better than just running right alongside each other, inducing voltages and sharing noise and that kind of thing. And so I've been experimenting with this type of thing. And in this configuration, the ground is actually acts as something of a Faraday cage to the live wire, because the ground goes directly from the chassis down to the earth ground, and it's rotating around the main signal live wire. But I've been thinking about it because we've been studying your Dragon cable, and we've been thinking about, okay, the AudioQuest Dragon, here's another geometry that does the same thing. It separates the cables, the three legs of the power cable physically, and then it orients them in a way where they cross each other at you know, much, much more than parallel, much closer to perpendicular than parallel angles. And so I started thinking about it and thinking about the influence of ground and how important ground is for a power cable. And I guess it's just been a culmination of years of my discussions over a long period of time and my evolution of understanding of RF and how that plays a role into audio. And so I started, you know, and then there's a lot of different power cable designs out there that have shields that are just that typical tinned copper braided sleeving that goes around the outside. And, you know, I have informational sources from all over regarding this DIY power cable stuff. And, one of which is Galen Garais at Belden. And I remember Galen talking about ground and shielding and materials and how it's just, it's very accepted and understood as a cable engineer that every material that you add to a cable plays a role. It is within the mechanical or the magnetic field, the E field, and then what some people are calling the H field online, which I don't quite understand that stuff. But anyway, it's, you know, these fields, this material exists in these fields and it plays a role. It interacts with it. So thinking about that, I've always been cautious to try to try any kind of shield. Now I have a bunch of copper, flat copper ribbon, like foil. You know, I could wrap it in foil. I've been thinking about a bunch of different approaches.
You have to try all kinds of stuff, you know?
And I can, so why not? And I have a really revealing system, right?
You do. It's sounding really, really, really great.
Well, let's get to it. Let me finish with what I did, and then let's hear what you thought.
Yeah.
So what I landed on was, let's take a couple wires, and I thought too, because of the Schroeder method of, and I don't know which Schroeder this is, but it's the idea that doubling up the live and the ground of your interconnects or whatever, if you're doing DIY, if you listen to that, a lot of times it's an improvement. So I used two wires, and I thought that what I'm going to do is make a pseudo shield on this thing, but without some kind of braiding, with some nice wire. So I've got this 18 gauge or 20 gauge or something, and it's nice copper, but I doubled it up because I just felt like it. So what I felt like doing was counter spiraling this shield wire, and running the length of the cable and then terminating it only on the ground on the AC plug, the male plug. And then I ran it up the length of the cable and just secured it with tape at the top. That's it. Just like an antenna that goes into the ground, not connected to the chassis of the device that it's powering. So, I did that. Then you came over and listened. I mean, I observed the increase in quality, but tell me what, you know, your experience.
Yeah, well, I didn't hear just this modification. I heard from the last time I heard your system to when I heard
it
then.
Yeah, after the modification.
But your system has really transformed, and it's extremely open and musical and casts a huge, massive soundstage. That I can say for sure.
Yeah, the improvement has been
tonal balance
stark.
Seemed very correct, like where you couldn't really pick it apart at all. It just seemed everything that you heard just seemed right.
Which is kind of new, because I've had a little bit mid-range heavy, let's say even lower mid-range heavy, like Bloomy for a while.
Yes, you know? That has gone away. Whatever you did, all the things that you did more than just one thing.
Yeah, a few things, but...
Your system sounds really awesome right now. Yeah.
So
very awesome.
Always fun for your audio buddy to come over and have a little bit of that same amazement that, like, you have that it can sound that good.
It was one of those things where I'm just kind of like, yep, that works. That makes me want to just listen to music and keep listening to stuff.
Yeah, we had a good little session. But right away when you sat down, you were like, this is like a totally different system.
Yeah.
You know.
Really is.
So I did the modification on the other power cable. I only have a couple components in my system. It's very simple. But did the modification on the other cable. It was another improvement in tonality from the DAC. Mm-hmm. Just vividness. It wasn't as big or as stark of an improvement, to be honest, as the amp. But I did this to my cables at work, my work cables, my work system today. And I brought them in, and that's unbelievable.
Oh, nice.
Amount of detail that I'm getting on typical tracks that I listen to all
the time. That's great.
It's incredible. It's
And I wanted to just mention that, you know, one clue that we have when it comes to power cables that we've noticed, something that has really tipped us off, is when you replace the power cable before the regenerator.
Oh, yeah.
That cable matters a whole lot.
Yeah.
And logic would say, no, the regenerator is going to regenerate the AC waveform. It's going to correct everything. It's going to correct the output impedance. I could put a really, you know, small gauge power cable on the regenerator, and the regenerator would just present a low impedance to the output, and the effects of that thin power cable wouldn't matter. It could be of any construction, it could be of anything, and the regen would just regenerate like normal and have an output presented to the components like normal. but that is not the case. It's just as sensitive with a power cable than it is on the output of the regen. So what does that say? That says, because I understand the performance of the regen to a very great degree, I've developed a regen before, meaning I've taken the circuits that we've had, the technology that we've had, and I made the P3 regenerator in the Stellar line. And with that, I had to learn about the performance of the product and how it technically performs. And what I can say is that line to neutral, it is regenerating. But line and neutral relative to ground, it's completely floating. And so that's what has tipped us off that what we call common mode.
Yeah, you can't separate
from
ground there.
From natural.
That's not safe, right?
There are ways to do it, actually. But I don't know if it would be separating it. It would be causing maybe more issues.
There
are isolation transformers that you can run and stuff like that. But again, that could be a whole podcast in itself, and they introduce other problems. There's no winning. And so what I'm saying is that the only way that the power cable is making as big of a difference as it really is that what we're hearing with power cables is a big common mode issue with RF.
Yeah, that exists unless you approach it.
Yeah.
There's another there's a discussion I was looking at this weekend that talks about, well, there are people that are really dialed into trying to eliminate wide bands of RF, which requires a whole bunch of different approaches. They're saying, like, you know, shield lengths and cable lengths and certain lengths, you know, have the ability to receive certain wavelengths and that kind of thing in the RF band. And so the idea is that some nerds out there are getting so into their grounding and their power that they're looking at each of these bands and how can I suppress this? How can I suppress that? Because I think what I'm doing with my little shield is, like, I'm taking a length and it's doubled to two, and I'm it's a little bit of alchemy where I do it, I listen to it, wow, you know, but I don't know what band it's approaching, what it's doing. And so this discussion was talking about, well, sometimes when you get a component that removes RF or is great at rejecting something, what it can do is actually remove the primary offender, showing a lot more clearly the secondary offender that might be existing in your system. You know, another example of why this hobby is a bunch of moving targets sometimes. But,
well, engineering is a moving target a lot of times too. For instance, this power cable discussion isn't far off from any component in RF that we're talking about. So if we're making a capacitor and we make this capacitor and we need to measure it for a certain bandwidth.
Yeah. Effectiveness.
This capacitor will be a capacitor at certain frequencies. It will be an inductor at other frequencies. And so there's what's called the self-resonance frequency of the capacitor. And that is the frequency in which it resonates, and past that, it starts to show inductive properties. So it starts to actually be more of an inductor after that resonance point. And so what's interesting is that whenever you make these cable mods, you have your own component. And in RF, you're moving. It's not about suppressing it at all. You're just moving the resonance frequency, and you're never gonna have no resonance frequency. It always has this resonance.
Interesting.
It's just that you're moving it, you're placing it somewhere else. So maybe some of these modifications are changing, you know, where it's resonating in the RF band.
Yeah.
Where some cables could possibly make the RF even worse. They could actually amplify because they're tuned right at the right frequency to just really resonate right where they're getting hit with RF. So in your system and your environment. So, you know, it's very complex when you talk about, electromagnetic interference and stuff like that. But
Yeah, it's complex. You just said that it sounded like I had a totally different system, and all I've talked about are small power changes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not crazy.
It's crazy.
On the topic of the power cable feeding the regenerator, before we move on, if you think about it from the fact that a regenerator is essentially a really souped up, kind of tricked out amplifier. Mm-hmm. It's amplifying a 60 hertz wave. Makes great sense. So then you can tell the characteristics of it by what amplifier characteristics it has and kind of intuit like a lot of what it's doing. In use, because I have a regenerator, it's great. It's like a little computer. You get these readings. You can watch the incoming THD, the outgoing THD.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about it as an amplifier and you think about how yours and my experience with this tube amplifier that you and I modded is that we it's either always been this way or we brought it to a point where it's extremely sensitive to little changes and very, very revealing of tiny little power, especially RF and power, what we found. Yeah, because we've explored a lot. I have with a bunch of different stuff.
Yeah, well, it's a simple circuit,
makes sense,
simple power supply, and when you're dealing with that, you don't have much PSRR, so power supply rejection ratio.
Mm. Well, is that similar?
You know, a more complicated amplifier could have 100 dB of rejection.
I see.
Up to, you know, hundreds of kilohertz, and so that would make a lot larger of a difference compared to an amplifier that's really simple with a couple of stages and you know, only was it 7 or 8 tubes or something like that in the front end. So yeah.
Well, the just the thought about the regenerator just makes me think, well, it's not surprising that the what you feed it, the input, can affect its output, you know.
Yeah.
Because it's like a lot of components, it's a sliding scale of the better you treat it in certain areas, the better results you see. It's still doing the same thing it's been doing.
Yeah.
So
what's interesting also about it is that just as if you were to use just stock power cables with a regenerator, you would hear the improvements that the regenerator brings still. You know,
yeah,
you don't need fancy,
you don't have
schmanchy power cables to hear what a regenerator does. That is proof of what engineers know, that in the amplitude domain, like when we're talking about THD and we're talking about output impedance, those things remain constant, and the cable itself doesn't necessarily create THD,
yeah,
or create some sort of signal that people are constantly looking for in audio cables and power cables. It doesn't. It's more complicated than that. It's affecting the RF band. It's perhaps rolling things down from the RF band, demodulating it into the audio band, causing a noise floor. There's that's possibly going on. You know, all these complex phenomena that are way beyond what people usually, that some of the cable doubters try to promote as the reason why it's stupid to think that an audio cable can make
they
a difference.
They never get that far.
You know, all they think about is THD and frequency response. And it's all these, the way I see those as you know, linear and nonlinear amplitude based distortions.
Okay.
You know, THD, like how much THD do you have? That's a nonlinear amplitude based distortion. And then you have frequency response, linear amplitude distortion.
Hmm. Yep.
Phase, linear amplitude distortion. So it's, I think that proves that the cable doesn't do anything in those domains, but that doesn't mean that it still doesn't affect the system. It's more complex than that in a scientific way that we can discuss and try to understand more about.
Yeah.
We should be discussing it rather than just instantly shooting it down and not having evidence for that.
Agreed. Okay. That's about it with me. Let's see. Is there anything else going on?
Nah.
That was great. I just spent the last couple of days remodding all the cables I have and this will be part of the future design of a power cable I've been talking about. So
nice.
Very excited. Very excited. Awesome. All right. What's been going on with you, Ming?
So,
audio-wise.
I received the diffusers.
Yeah, last week we were talking about it. And good job getting the boxes out of here, by the way. This is a normal kitchen again.
That is something I was going to mention was those boxes were like really difficult.
Yeah, we talked about that last week.
That was kind of like a portion of my last week was removing all these boxes from the diffusers that I received. But I did get to install some diffusers.
Well, you put some in the den system now.
I did.
Which, by the way, you still owe me a nice, well-lit picture of this den system to share with the audience.
I will.
Yeah.
So now I have some diffusers in the den system, and I was able to A and B with and without the den or the diffusers in there. And what I noticed is that the system is way more open sounding with the diffusers, and
yeah,
the soundstage is far wider, and there just seems to be less glare in areas where usually there shouldn't be glare in the recording.
Now, what do you know about these diffusers? What's the bandwidth? Because usually they give you a kind of range that it's effective based on the QRD pattern.
And depth.
Quadratic, and depth. Well, yeah. So depth, width, and length matters. So quadratic residue diffusers are those ones that have these little long, thin, rectangular wells at different heights, and they kind of... what it is it's creating parallel wall environments where waves can easily go in, and waves of the right wavelength will find themselves trapped in there, cancel themselves out. And what you do is you make a panel with a bunch of different ones of these, and so you can get a spread of frequencies. And it's important to note, like, some of the QRD things are just random computer-generated, random, like, you know, models of some texture. You know, I made one by cutting dowels, you know, 100 times at 4 different lengths and then inserting them and gluing them randomly to a block and that kind of thing. So that, you know, that approach can do the same type of thing. Not as purely effective as a computer-designed QRD that's like yours. But yeah, you can get several diffusers of varying bandwidths. And that's kind of one of the approaches I want to take in my house, is have a few different bands kind of focused on.
So this is 325 through 3K.
And that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a problematic zone for a lot of people.
That's one of the largest.
Nice. That's nice.
Especially one to 3K is if you can deal 1 to 3K, that's where you're going to be really sensitive in your hearing, and where the flutter echo in that area in the room will really drive you out of the room in the sense of creating a forward sounding system.
What's crazy about this is that we get that figure 350 to 3K, and yet there's still going to be more variables from the time that someone who hears this podcast says, that sounds about right for something I want to try, goes to ATS Acoustics and gets them, because listening height can determine what waves comb filter.
Big time.
Where your speakers are. There's, like I said, this is
so
a
many
hobby
variables.
Of moving targets.
Yeah.
It can be maddening, or you can kind of like not stress over it and just roll with it, and as soon as you hear a new variable, you're like, okay, I'll add that to the pile. And
you know that Mr. Bean episode where he's trying to get the TV to work and he has to just stand just right to get, and every time he goes and moves and looks at it, it goes static.
When he looks at it, it goes static. Yeah.
That's the way I feel about my stereo system sometimes.
That's really good.
Yeah. So
all right, so it is sounding great in there. And anything else going on?
That's about it right now.
Okay.
I've been doing a lot of power cable listening on just changing the regen power cable.
Yeah.
And you know, that the outcome is you know, that I really love.
It's fun to own one of the better power cables in the world right now. I'm sure,
yeah, I
I'm
love,
sure you enjoy that.
I love your design, and it beats pretty much everything I have in this house. The Dragon is still quite incredible.
Well, I can't wait to do another listening sesh when we put this mod on there.
Yeah.
If you're into that.
I'm very much so into that.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get into some questions here.
Got some questions this week. We're actually going to tackle three today. Three quick ones. So if any of you would like to have a question answered, be part of the podcast, please don't hesitate. Our email address for questions, tips, and album recommendations, if desire, is hi-fi@outlook.com. This week we got a few questions. Again, we are holding a couple for Chris the next time Chris visits us. We were hoping for today, but he's busy today. But anybody who hasn't had a question answered for a little while, just hang tight. We got you in mind. We're just waiting until we get Mr. Expert, our speaker expert, Chris Brunhaver, back on the show. But anyway, today we're going to start with Thad from Lincoln, Nebraska, from Boiler Brewing Company, who awesomely sent us some beers.
Oh yeah,
not long ago. Yeah, crazy crowlers, big.
Thank you
giant
for that,
cans.
By the way.
Yeah, thank yeah. Thanks, Thad. It was delicious. But Thad has a question today. So Thad bought a Blue Sound Node, and in having some trouble actually getting it to work in his basement. I'm assuming this is the basement, but it's somewhere where he's not getting Wi-Fi signal. And he's talked to Blue Sound already, and they're talking about, you know, it sounds like the Wi-Fi signal is weak. He notes that it's a little odd because he has a lot of Wi-Fi connected devices in the house, and they seem to work everywhere and even outside in the yard. So he's kind of like, you know, it's a pain in the butt that this Blue Sound doesn't want to work in this one position. Says, so yeah, his listening room is far away from the modem and he can't move the modem. So Thad says that his recommendation that he got from this audiophile IT guy that he knows is that, the recommendation from the Blue Sound guy was to try Ethernet over power line adapters. And then he has a non-audiophile IT guy that he knows that said that they can put noise on the line. So he's asking, what do we think about Ethernet over power line adapters in this one situation for streaming music? He says, you know, the noise thing being an audiophile, that's not what I want to hear. So, okay. Thanks, Thad, for that question. Pretty quick answer for you. I have bought Ethernet over power line adapters with the sole purpose of being able to get Rune to work on my system about 100 feet from my router, you know. And, in the past, having worked for PS Audio years ago, I was PS Audio's retail sales manager, and I know about, you know, I took a bunch of phone calls from people that were struggling to like make a Wi-Fi connection to the bridge, the PS Audio's network, you know, card or whatever that's in their DAX. And the other day I set up a Blue Sound Node 2i in the front office of the music room. And so I was able to observe kind of Blue OS and watch how that works. And all I can tell you two things from my experiences that is that number one thing that I like to do in Rune is upsample to DSD and send it straight to the DAC. The DAC loves that, actually sounds great. That was a no-go on the power line over Ethernet. And I looked at a bunch of different models on, I bought it from Amazon. So, you know, maybe I was looking in the wrong place, but I looked in a bunch of different models. And I got the fastest one, the one that seemed to be able to carry the most just traffic. I don't know. And, you know, it's two units, receiver and transmitter, and got them to work, played some music, and it was unrecognizable as music. It wasn't music. It was terrible. Uh-oh. It was just like, it is a bunch of digital, like weird digital noise. I've heard a lot of digital noise and this was weird. So I'm just like instantly like, oh no.
Oh, so you
like,
mean it literally wasn't music?
No.
I thought you were saying that it was music, but it wasn't.
It wasn't even close to music. It was just this weird, like,
so you got a noise.
Barely music. Like, you could barely tell it was a song. Otherwise, it was this really, like, staticky, digital, horrible hash.
It's not promising.
Not a promising start so far. The other day with the blue sound, I just noticed it takes a while for it to, like, lock on once I lock on to this modern integrated amplifier that's all fitted out with Bluetooth. It's just a little slow. So all of these things, plus your experience of your other Wi-Fi components seem to work in this location, but that doesn't, leads in my experience that I expressed leads me to think that there is so much traffic when you're streaming music that's probably beyond music. It's probably metadata. It's probably background stuff from your programs that you're streaming with. It's just so much that my experience has not been good. And I turned off DSP, by the way, in Rune and just tried to run it straight. Just 4416 would not do it. So I don't know if that's just for the bridge or what, but it was so noisy and almost unrecognizable as music. So I just cannot recommend the Ethernet over Powerline. If we have some listeners out there, this is one great thing that having a great listening audience can do, is this is my experience, you know. So if anyone has a different experience where it actually worked great, you have a model that you like, you can maybe give us a tip on what your setup was like, feel free to send us an email at hifi@outlook.com and maybe we can, get some other, anecdotal information out there. But as far as the science, none of us are, experts in this field, but, I do have some experience and it was terrible. So, best luck that. I don't know. I don't have any other options that I'm not sure.
I will say that when I first heard about the idea, I didn't even believe that it was what it was.
It's a thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're injecting that into, well, at those frequencies, it's going to be a very complex network that is different in everybody's house. And then you're sending that also to every other component when you inject it on the AC line. I don't like that.
Every other connected device, right? Cannot be good, right?
I don't like that.
Yeah. Sounds horrible for music.
Yeah, it's not.
So theoretically, not and in my experience, it's been awful. So if anybody else can explain to us, like, this works and here's why, I'd love to hear it. hifi@outlook.com. But otherwise, Dad, go a different direction. Here's what I did. It's not awesome, but when you own your house, you can kind of do things. And what I did was picked a couple of AC vents in the floor and decided that a cable was going to go in there.
Yeah.
And took a drill underneath it, drilled out a little hole, half inch or something. And to my experience, just checking it when the AC's on, it's not a big leak. It's not leaking into the thing. It's fine. It's got a little cable here, and then I stretched it down my basement, and then it goes into the room. So it was a pain to do that because partly I'm like, I don't want a cable in there. Now it just goes along the floor. You can't even see it. I never even noticed
it. Yeah, but like, how can you go wrong?
But once I set it up, cable's
the way to go.
Hugely awesome.
The cable's the way to go.
It was so good. And it's been so good ever since I did that.
Don't inject RF on your AC.
The cable's the way to go.
The cable's the way to go.
Find a way. Buy higher, hell or high water, buddy.
Yeah.
I mean,
cable.
Yeah.
Cable. That's absolutely.
That's our opinion.
Yep.
Okay, moving on to the next one from listener David Sharp. Dear Darren and Duncan, I've been keen to learn from y'all about the benefits of supplying clean AC power to components in a hi-fi equipment rack. Great. It's a subject that we love. And if we have to be the AC guys, I'm super happy to be the AC guys. I'm just thrilled that this experience, understanding slowly through lots of experience.
And by that, we're not the cooling guys. We're the AC power guys.
Right.
Yeah.
We're not the cable guys. We're not the cooling guys. But we are the power guys. Okay. Are there any What about clean DC power for the growing number of devices in my AV rack that rely on wall warts? Are there any audiophile grade products that can replace the wall warts and distribute clean DC power to multiple devices? Do you want to turn on light in here so you can read that a little better? Maybe some hue, something a little reddish or bluish. I'll keep reading here. I've never been able to find any, thanks buddy, never been able to find anything like that except in Pro Audio for guitar pedal boards. For example, here's a link to a Voodoo Lab pedal power box. Interesting. Maybe it doesn't matter for DC, but I would be interested in your comments. Also, what's the name of your favorite supplier for parts like XLR connectors and speaker cable terminators? I heard you mention the name of a place a while back, but I spaced it. Thanks and best wishes from New Orleans. Oh, Mono Dave. That's Mono Dave. We've answered a question of his before. Remember, he's deaf in one ear. Garrett, so he has
I remember that.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So what do you have to say? You got a little box in front of you.
Yeah, I do. That is that it may not be practical to replace every power supply in your whole system with a linear power supply. But the good news is that there are some power supplies on the market that are super low noise that are, you know, designed for audio. And one of those is iFi accessory power supply. And you can find this on just Amazon. Type this into Amazon, just iFi power supply.
They're all over now.
And
they're,
it'll come up on Amazon, and then everywhere. You have to pick your voltage. So they come in 5, 9, 12, and 15 volts. Yep. And
you're a fan. You've got a couple of these.
I've got a couple of them
around. Yeah.
And so they're 1 microvolt output noise, which is really low.
Yeah, they have comparison graphs and stuff on the back.
It's got a jet on the back, so it's got to be good.
Yeah, a picture of a fighter jet.
Yep.
iFi just has a great reputation too. You know,
the fighter jet?
The fighter jets have great reputation. That's all you can see on there. Yeah, it's a cool fighter jet. No, iFi, man, they do very interesting, definite scientific things. Mm-hmm. And then they come out with it because they see like a market. And
yeah,
who else is doing this? Upgraded audiophile DC wall warts.
Oh, I think it's great because it's still switch mode power supply.
It's not an LPS. It's a quiet switch mode power supply.
It's a quiet switch mode power supply, which probably means it has some expensive wide bandwidth linear regulation after the switch mode part. Which is great. It's okay.
And they're probably smart with the Y capacitor, right? And just
they probably have some Y capacitors and some perhaps some common mode filtering and all that in there. I'm not sure, but you know, it's
I guess it's a two pronger, so
it's gonna be a lot better. Oh, it is a two pronger, isn't it?
So it's not gonna be a Y capacitor. Yeah.
Yeah. But your you know, this is gonna be better than your standard POS that comes with your accessories.
Could be better than cheap LPS, so. Linear power supply, which is something that we covered. We actually had a podcast episode all about power supplies. We were comparing switch mode versus linear. Darren was explaining the ins and outs from an engineering perspective, and then I think we mentioned the iFi, but it's just a great product.
Well, you certainly could cheap out on a linear power supply. So, you know, that's when I say it's not really that practical to have every single power supply in your whole system. You know, we have all these accessories today, and we have reclockers, and we have blah, 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 blah. Well, you know, the iFis are good upgrades to those type of components, the little boxes that you have sitting around, you know, that just consume 5 or 10 watts. That's really what you're looking for. And these are like $50 a piece.
Yep.
I don't know. It's just my recommendation.
It's a good deal. It's a
great
product.
I'm just a customer of theirs. I'm not affiliated.
Yep. Okay. The second question you have, Mono Dave, I have a couple of outlets I like. One is parts connection with a connection with an X, not a CT. So CONNEXION. They're Canadian. So always go with UPS. Don't go with USPS. Anyway, the shipping is a thing, but you know, if you go with the right one, you can get it in a few days. And Parts Express has been awesome to me. And I've gotten so many cool things there. Our Parts Connection, I should say, not Parts Express. Parts Express is good too, but it's Parts Connection is a audiophile's playground. Yep. Another one is VH Audio. I like vhaudio.com. They have it's Chris Venhouse's website, and he's the guy behind VCAP. And so VH Audio is great. They have a lot of audiophile stuff. Some stuff you can't get anywhere else. But a lot of bulk cable, a lot of interesting wiring. He makes his own wiring with this, what he calls a Teflon airlock dielectric, which is foamed Teflon. So it's got a dielectric constant of 1.4 as opposed to 2.2, which is Teflon. Damn. So
it's pretty low.
Yeah, good stuff. He makes good stuff. So I love VH Audio. I like Take 5 Audio in Canada for a few things, but they have this big cryogenic part of their deal, so they cryo treat a lot of stuff. That's interesting to check out. Sonic Craft,
yeah,
is the last one that I'd say that I frequent. Although mm-hmm. I've noticed recently, you know, for any DIYers out there, wirecable.com, wirecare.com has been awesome in terms of like getting sleeving and Techflex and cotton and that kind of thing. Really quick shipping, like 2 days.
Sweet.
You know, really good stuff. But
I didn't know about that one.
Sonic Craft is good. I'd say the best website is Parts Connection. It's such a breeze. You just there. It's such a walk in the park, just figuring out what you want. And
the stuff that they carry.
They carry just, really, you know, choice stuff.
Yep.
None of the crap that you don't. Well-picked stuff. So another Chris behind that website, but up in Canada, Parts Connection. Big fans. Okay, moving on to the last question from our listener, Michael Kelly, from Panama City Beach, Florida. And David was from New Orleans, and Stad's from Lincoln, Nebraska. Great. So we're getting everybody's location. Okay. Michael's question is, hello, I have a very simple question. Would there be any advantages to reclocking a USB signal before an asynchronous DAC? I'll share my experience. The answer I have for you is yes, Michael. I can't say why I'm not a digital engineer, but I what I'm sharing is my experience. I own only asynchronous DACs, just a couple. I have a few DACs in my stable or whatever, and I have a Jitterbug and an Uptone audio regen. I put them in front of all of the DACs, and I've listened to improvements, and I keep the two in place. I sadly fried my Uptone regen when I was testing this vintage piece of gear that sent a huge voltage back on something on one of my test lines and like killed my HDMI ports on my computer really quick and like torched a cable. I actually had a spark and a fused connector on a cable and toasted my Uptone audio USB regen. Like I have no idea. This was an analog device that was just kicking out a heap of DC. It was an old Sansui that was only analog. And so the only input to my system was through analog, but somehow my USB regen just blew.
Just a straight toaster.
Don't know, man. Don't know what happened in that. I have a crazy job, by the way. I'm Duncan. I'm a testing technician at the Music Room, which is the world's largest reseller of hi-fi audio gear. So we actually physically handle thousands of pieces of gear. And you see stuff like that. You know, stuff blows up sometimes.
Blows up.
So, yeah, it's always made a difference, Michael. I've noticed that I like the Audio Quest Jitterbugs, what it does to the top frequencies, the high frequency. I like what the Uptone regen does for the low frequency. And again, that's going into an asynchronous DAC. So, yeah, great experiences with that. Why? I don't know. That's another podcast. Some other guys you need to ask.
Well, you know, it's a complicated answer. That's what it is. It's an answer that, you know, people want to come to all these conclusions, especially when I say people, I mean engineers, you know, they want to come to conclusions.
It's asynchronous. So it doesn't matter what you do beforehand to everything. It's going to.
Let's minimize the variables like that. We were taught in school to minimize the variables. Hey, given this and this and this, find this. And, you know, it's. In the real world, it's so complicated. There are all these other variables. Mm. So when everybody disagrees with your assumption, instead of just saying that they're delusional, it's all psychoacoustics and it doesn't matter, say, maybe think
or
in the back
be right.
of your mind, think that maybe they're right and that you need to figure out and think about the system on a as far as like a larger picture and trying to figure out what you're missing, like what are the variables that you're not currently including in your problem.
I love the Arifa hobby. You know, if it sounds good, it is good. You know, the measurements are everything. You know,
yeah. And the measurements are always very specific. Like we were just...
Yeah. And some people say measurements are the beginning of our understanding of audio.
Yeah.
And it's so rudimentary.
Well, like I was just talking about with the power cables, the fact, like with the THD and amplitude and how, you know, sometimes those are just the simple arguments against cables that
yeah.
we, you know, we've put these two RCAs into this box that has common mode rejection. And then we listen to the difference between the two cables and I don't hear any music. And therefore there's no difference between those two cables. It's like, okay, well, interesting. You're comparing the, you know, THD and amplitude domain and also the THD product that wouldn't really sound like music. That would sound like noise and really odd products, right? Because it would just be the subtraction
hear
of
what that is. The
of harmonics.
The delta of what you're hearing.
Well, it would be, it wouldn't really be necessary unless the THD was super high, which on a cable is going to be super low. You know, it would be very odd sounding, more likely, because you're listening to just a few selected harmonics of the audio itself.
And then tons of RF that you can't hear, possibly hear.
Well, it's not factoring in RF. Because, see, RF affects the components that it's hooked up to. It's not the cable itself. It's the cable doing something to the RF that then does something to
cable's the... cable's either passing it or it's preventing it from...
Or changing propagating. It.
Or changing
the resonance,
right?
Because the resonance of the cable might change. You might get a different area that the cable will resonate in RF.
Yeah, because it's still energy and it's got to be absorbed. You're absolutely right. So much easier to move.
Yeah, and it's all about the energy. Physical geometry when you're talking about that. So that the complex network of the C's and the L's and the R's.
Yep.
And the length and
capacitors,
the dimensions
and
of this.
Inductors. Yeah, the three main electrical qualities of this stuff.
But if you're just... you know, throwing it into something that makes a difference from the input, like it subtracts the two inputs and you're listening to that difference, you're not factoring in the RF interference and performance as far as how they're interacting with components like DACs that are highly sensitive to RF. I don't know.
I wonder if the regions do anything for RF.
They do. To an extent, and common mode wise, not like that much. Let's put it that
way. I love going back to that Duke Ellington quote: "If it sounds good, it is good." And he wasn't talking about audio gear; he was talking about music and the things musicians play. But it's a mentality that you can really kind of understand that. You know, go to our website. We put it right out front. This is about fun. You know,
it is. And you don't want to lock yourself.
If you're having fun, if you enjoy it, that's
you don't want to lock yourself in a box. You really don't.
Like you mentioned about the stock power cables, how like anybody listening to a stock power cable into a PS Audio region that hasn't heard that experience before would just be floored because, hey, there's this component's doing what it says it's going to do. A lot of stuff. But if you haven't heard it on a great cable, you haven't heard it. Well, unless your experience is nothing, and then you could hear it on a stock cable. So again, if it sounds good, it is good. You know, it comes down to the experiences.
I love having the Dragon because I just ruined people.
You've ruined yourself.
I ruin people because they some of them don't even believe in power cables.
Yeah.
And then I show them the difference between. First, I'm going to show you an expensive power cable compared to the Dragon.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're just blown away by that. And then, okay, you want to hear a stock power cable. Let's put a stock power cable.
God, I love that.
Boom.
I need to do that to people
like,
at my
ooh,
system.
Yeah. The stock power cables, you know, hey.
Secret trick.
It's far from what something like the Dragon can do. So it's interesting breaking people's molds, and you know, you don't want to get stuck in the box, especially if you're a designer. You don't want to get stuck in the box. I hear some designers, they're asked questions like, oh, how did you listen to this component when you were designing it? And I've heard answers in the industry. This was a real answer from a large manufacturer of electronics. They go, oh, what we do is that we design the component correctly to begin with.
Oh, that was your response to like, why did you choose this component?
Yeah. Or what did you, no, they, the response to how did you listen to the component when you were designing it?
Oh, we designed it correctly.
And they're like, we design it correctly. We don't listen to
way
it.
Way to answer that question.
Because we design it correctly to begin with, unlike other people.
Right, dude. Yeah. Well, yeah.
You know, no, I'm not
is
even
anybody looking at these textbooks?
Explain why that is not right. You know, why that can't be possible.
It's absurd.
You're limiting your scope there. You're limiting what you can do because you're not double checking yourself. You're just presuming that you know what the answer is, and it's and not second guessing yourself, which is not really a smart thing to do. But yeah. Anyways.
All right.
What was the question? The
question was about reclocking before.
Oh, okay. Anyways. That does make sense.
That asynchronous USB was invented to preclude these kind of, you know,
issues. It may help, but it still matters. Your cables matter.
Two things that do the same kind of deal.
Yeah.
Regenerator. People could say, why? It shouldn't have an expensive power cable in front of it. It's supposed to totally reinvent the power from nothing.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, it's not from nothing. Energy has to come from somewhere, like just like the asynchronous USB, it can be improved, you know.
And the USB cable before that could matters, you know.
Yeah, and that got me thinking about the contribution RF, but you know, and Uptone, they acknowledged they're okay, we're going to interrupt the 5-volt on the USB and then reintroduce it with our own power supply, you know, get an Uptone, an iFi for your Uptone, and there you go. That's actually a great start there, Michael.
Anyways, I could ramble on.
Best
more.
Best luck.
But...
Have fun. All right. Here we are at the topic.
All right. Take a
break. Ground loops.
All right.
Where do we begin?
What is a ground loop? That's the way it sounds a lot of times.
Something like that.
Well, you can have a ground loop at a lot of different frequencies. So you could also have a ground loop that you know, is higher in frequency. But the most common is going to be, you know, 60 hertz hum. And the reason is because that's the frequency of the mains,
power,
at least in North America here. So,
as we talked about on the power supply podcast, the job of the power supply is to take that 60 hertz, the diode bridge doubles it, and then the capacitor bank smooths it, and then it goes to the regulation, hopefully, you know, unless it's an unregulated amp, powerful amp or something like that. Mm-hmm.
And then that component measures well and doesn't produce that hum.
Yeah, it doesn't make
But then when you hook it up, it causes, then you get hum.
Then there's
hum. And you go, what the heck is up with that? Hmm. Well, the reason why you get that 60 hertz hum sometimes with amplifiers and components, usually you're using a single-ended connection like an RCA cable. And the two ground references on one component compared to the other are at two different potentials, meaning two different voltages at that frequency.
Now, what are you talking about? Isn't ground supposed to be 0 volts and absolutely nothing?
No, ground is just a reference in a way. A lot of times ground actually could be elevated at certain frequencies.
Yeah. Okay.
So ground,
what would cause that? I mean,
Impedance.
Okay.
So impedance from some sort of your lowest impedance point, and then going upwards in impedance, you could have a component that's sitting at a higher impedance than the other. And when you flow current through that impedance at 60 hertz, you get a voltage. And because there's common mode amplification going on with single-ended connections, that's
where ground is shared with the the bottom
well,
of the
that
signal.
Amplification is happening between signal
and ground. So the signal is riding on top
and
of ground.
And it's using ground as a reference compared to the signal. Well, if you introduce that offset.
A voltage. It's like
a
it's
voltage,
part of
you're
the music.
Adding it to the signal. Yeah. And that's what that is. That's the voltage that is actually being produced over the difference in the impedance between the two different ground potentials that you're running a current through. Okay.
So we've talked about ground loops from the perspective of pro audio before, because we've talked about how all of pro audio is balanced because they do really long runs. They plug into different parts of the same circuit that are very far apart from each other, or different circuits in the same building, just because you'll have the mixing board in the back of the house and you have the performers in the front of the house, et cetera.
Yeah.
So how does this turn up in a real world home though? Like, why would you get a ground potential difference in a, and you said impedance, but where are the sources? Like how does this relate to the home audio file?
The home audio file, it's a lot of times when the most common situation with ground loops is that you have your preamp on the side of the room and you have your amplifiers in the front of the room on the floor near the speakers.
Okay.
And you run a long run to them. And the power amplifiers are plugged into the front sockets, wall sockets on the front of the room behind your speakers. And the preamp is plugged into a wall socket on the side of the room. The earth ground there has a cable that runs around the room.
Right.
And so the cable has an impedance to it.
Because of its length? And it's DCR or something like that?
Because of its...
Well, DCR.
AC. Essentially, it's close to DC at 60 hertz. You're close to DC. So, yes, it's close to the DCR.
It's resistance.
Maybe it's just slightly higher than its resistance. But, you know, that if you had a current loop where the currents are actually flowing through that section.
That path.
They're flowing through the path of the RCA cables.
Oh, so they're going...
They're using the RCA cable as a
outlet
current.
Outlet to outlet, then RCA to RCA.
Yeah, it would be flowing through the RCA cable in that situation. And so, because you're passing a current through that impedance, you're now getting a voltage potential difference.
So in this situation, the solution is easy. XLR.
Well, if the component offers that.
Right, it's not easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
if the component doesn't offer that, this is your next... this is what you have to go next. If you just have single ended and it's a single ended component, the best way to run a single ended system is short connections and plugging your power cables into the same into the exact same outlet or strip or regenerator, whatever it is. And making sure that everything is going directly to the same source. All those grounds are directly, what we call like starred directly into the same outlet or strip.
It's rare the person whose whole system pulls more than 5 amps. You know, 5 is, you know, when everything's cooking is I think what my system's doing.
Yeah.
And that's 500 watts.
600 watts, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's what it ends up being. That's what the P10 tells me or whatever.
Yep.
But, you know, it's a bunch of current, but it's not close to 15. So I could easily, I could set all of this up to come out of one outlet. Now I do have a regenerator, so it's kind of like, you know, my regenerator is making 1200 watts of power, so I know how much amperage I have. But the idea that you can put a whole system through one outlet without having too much actual compression or problems with current draw it's totally feasible. I have anecdotal comments about this. So I'm Duncan. I'm a testing technician. I mentioned I should introduce Darren. Darren's the senior analog design engineer at PS Audio, very prominent hi-fi brand. But I test lots of gear every day, 10 items a day, something like that. And I do all the returns these days. Somebody sends a product, something back to us. They say, you know, this happened or I didn't like it. Most of them are didn't likes. Some of them are like, this thing has a buzz to it. So I, you know, take it back. I want my money back. And, invariably, I want to say not 9.98 times out of 10.
It doesn't have,
doesn't buzz at all because yeah. all of my system is tied to one inlet.
Yeah.
I run everything off of one circuit.
There's another variable too. And that is that components are internally ground differently.
Yeah.
So components can have different interactions with that one component that you're, you know, trading back and forth between your systems, and it will have a different performance in, as far as this ground loop goes. Like the behavior will be different.
Well, you have a lot of two prong devices whose power supplies are simply double insulated, and yep. And so I remember taking calls at PS Audio when you'd hear people were dealing with ground loop problems, and I'd ask, you know, and they said, this is my, I just got this PS Audio component and now I have a hum. What's going on? Well, this PS Audio component has a real earth ground. So what you're listening to for the first time, one of my first questions would be, did your last amplifier have two prongs or three? And they said two. I said, there you go.
You see, what's going on here is that the two prong component is trying to ground itself through
to itself.
No, through the other component, through the RCA cable.
Oh, through the RCA cable.
You see,
oh,
so you're flowing current through that to ground. It's trying to get to ground to the lowest impedance.
When you hear the words double insulated, you're thinking about safety and you're thinking about like lightning strike or this thing. This thing
double insulated means that the primary areas within the component, so before the transformer, have to meet a certain standard.
Okay,
that's what double insulated means.
Well, that's
it's
not
just
much.
That it's well, it's in design. It is. It sucks.
What do you got before the transformer?
But
all
the primary components. It could be a lot. I mean, in a switch mode power supply, it could be a good portion of it.
Sure.
And so all those, when you're making a two-prong device, also known as like a class two device, it's difficult from a safety perspective. And so the double insulation really matters. All these creepage and clearances that we deal with in electronics to meet safety standards, those change and they become harder to meet. And so the component has to be done in a certain way to meet those standards.
You don't see it a lot. You see it with like the most popular receiver brands out there, you know, the Denons and the Marantzes and stuff.
The problem is that the way to go about grounding is that you keep the same type of grounding structure. So you could do all two prongs, but the minute you introduce a third prong, like a class one device that is done in
so
a certain way.
An audiophile could have a system full of class two devices and
theoretically that would make sense to have all the same grounding structures.
Gotcha.
But the other thing is that class ones can be configured differently.
Yeah.
So some class ones also cause problems with other class ones. So I'm not saying that you have to be all class two or all class one.
Gotcha.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that the grounding structures are done differently. But theoretically, you want to keep the same type of grounding structure. And so when you keep it all class two, all two prong, that is one way to go. You probably still will run into some problems. But you're definitely taking the common mode aspect out of it because you don't have any current flow to earth ground. So it's a little bit complicated in the sense that I can't just sit here and lay out all the different options. Every component is internally laid out differently. And those grounding structures in the PCB themselves, how they're referencing the grounds back to their power supply reference
ground
and all that kind of stuff.
Plane versus star ground.
Yeah. That dictates how the power supply currents are flowing inside that device, which also will affect how the external grounding is affects the overall performance of the device, the behavior of the device. So all these things factor in when we're talking about what causes ground loops.
Yeah.
You know,
and it really could it be any element in the system? Like it could be the amp. It could be the preamp. I mean, you started to explain that, okay, if you've got a two prong preamp and a three prong amp, then maybe it's the amp that's picking up this noise.
If you're grounding through single end, I mean, if you're connecting through single-ended connection. Yeah,
that's the main thing, isn't it?
Then that's something I would start thinking about is, hey, like, you know, the two-prong component's trying to ground itself, and there are currents flowing through the RCA connections in that scenario. And then it's just taking, there's an impedance between those two connections, and you're getting a voltage over that, and that's what's causing the ground loop. There's your ground loop. So,
all right, well, let's
different scenarios, but you know, it's just something, I guess what we wanted to do here was to just explain what it is and explain how there are different scenarios that you can encounter, and what we advise to how to counteract some of the ground loop stuff. Like, what are things
that's where I was going to go next. Because, you know, one of the older approaches is lift the ground pin. You know, a PS Audio power cables famously had unscrewable ground pins. But it's just one of those things.
I could never, ever, ever recommend lifting a ground like that.
Because it's not safe, right?
Yeah, because it's not safe.
Well, but what are the, you know, how often is you going to get a lightning strike that sends, I mean, what is it?
No, it's not, that's not the worry. The worry is that you have some sort of ungrounded chassis that's floating.
Mm-hmm. Usually the chassis is grounded.
Yeah, right. But when you lift the third prong, that chassis starts to float.
Mm-hmm.
And that you have some sort of short to that chassis internally. So, right. For instance, a tube amplifier, and for some reason, you get a short to the chassis.
Well, this is how I got zapped. Yeah, this is exactly how I got zapped.
Let me guess, Macintosh?
Yeah, Macintosh. And it was KT-80 tubes.
It was a joke.
Where the keys were snapped off. Well, you could have just asked, two-prong vintage tube amp?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the answer is, it's a two-prong power cord, vintage tube amp. And no, the keys were snapped off, so it was inserted wrong. But that could happen.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, so, you know, that then you have this, you know, you have hundreds of volts on the chassis sitting there, and somebody's touching the chassis of another component that is grounded, and then their right hand touches the other component that's not grounded, and all of a sudden, you're getting grounded.
This is
the ground current is flowing through you now.
Like,
and you don't want that.
Kids just come and touch things. Like, this is the real deal. You know, people could die. So So that's your concern.
So that's the concern. And trust me, when we go into doing safety, I actually did safety at Bowers and Wilkins for years. And when we would do safety stuff, all the different things that pop up. I mean, that is like one scenario there, you know, where what if this happens, you know, and then we apply that even down to the specific circuit behavior.
Yeah, here's
what
the
if
circuit.
This transistor
what
fails,
happen?
What happens then? Right. Does the fuse fail in the right time, or does the fuse fail before there's a fire? Because, you know, that's what your fuse is there for. Your fuse is there to stop that component from literally catching your house on fire.
Right.
So you know, we go through all those safety things. So, you know, I don't know about lifting your ground. I can't say lift your ground.
Yeah, he can't say it.
Like the idea of lifting a third prong. I really don't think that's a great idea. There's usually better ways of going about this. And so, you know, that the starring configuration that we were talking about, how you plug, make sure that all in a single ended system, that all your power cables are going to a single strip, and then plug that strip into one outlet.
Yeah.
Now you've created a situation where all the ground references are similar.
They're the same. Yeah.
And so it's not going across the room. You don't have a long ground wire that's circling around the side. We see other issues where you introduce some component that people don't think about that is actually grounding the system. And the two most common components, a TV and a computer. So the TVs, some of them actually have the HDMI connectors, the outside, the shell of the HDMI connectors actually connect to earth, some of them. And they do that. They do that to get through EMC. I exactly know why they're doing that.
So if you think about it, though, there's power on. There's DC power on an HDMI.
There is, but it doesn't have to do with that. It's the fact that they are, so you have this HDMI cable that's coming around to your processor on the side of the room or behind you.
Same situation.
So it's the same situation. Yeah. It's just people don't think about it because it's not an audio component.
Yeah.
And then they unplug the HDMI from the TV and it goes away. The hum goes away. It's like, ah. So it was the TV that was introducing the ground loop. So, you know, and then computers, the same thing. Sometimes you get whining with computers. That's a ground loop at higher frequencies, sometimes through USB because USB has ground to it.
Tell me something.
Yeah.
When you've got an amplifier that has single-ended and XLR inputs, and it recommends that if you're using single-ended to short the 1 and 3 pins on the XLR and brings you XLR jumpers. I've been in a situation where we turn on an amp and there's noise that has multiple elements, but one of them is sort of groundish noise, and one of them's a higher frequency element, but it's this buzz, constant buzz. You put the things in there, it's gone.
Oh, okay. I know what that is.
Is that a ground thing at all?
No.
No.
Okay. What that is that the input of the amplifier is super high impedance.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
a nice amp, so it's 200K or something. The impedance.
Yeah, 200K.
Or RCA would be 100. XLR would probably be 200.
Okay. Well, it's 100K. It's still super high. It's essentially floating. So what's happening is that it's picking up noise from around it, and then what you do is when you insert that ground pin, it's actually grounding and pulling down that input that's just flapping
to straight to the ground. And since it's XLR,
so it's actually the fact that the negative input is floating.
Gotcha.
When you don't have the ground pin in there, so that's what's happening, and you're getting all this kind of power supply noise, you know, and that's why you're hearing it as somewhat of a higher frequency components in it, because you're dealing with multiple harmonics.
Yeah, lots of stuff.
Yeah, tons of harmonics.
Another thing I noticed that I don't think is ground noise is when you hear a hum, but then you kind of look around for it. It does sound like that 60 hertz like hum thing, and then you notice, oh, that's the actual box. That's not the speakers. I just wanted to make the point that all of what we are talking about,
that it can come mechanically
comes
as well.
The speakers.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's situations where you have mechanical hum and you might think it's a ground loop. It's not.
Yeah.
If it's a ground loop, it's coming through the speakers. It's amplified in the system and it's part of the signal.
Yep, absolutely.
But yeah, I have a transformer that is so big. It's in my Constellation downstairs that certain times of day I'll be downstairs and I'll just hear.
Yep, that's it,
and it'll go away, and I'm just like, are you kidding me? Like,
it was some sort of inrush current or something like that, and
something else going on somewhere else on the electrical circuit.
Another one is phono preamplifiers with turntables. You have Riga turntables that actually ground the negative outputs of the cartridge. So cartridges are inherently somewhat like microphones, you know, they're a balanced device.
I got mine too close to my Decware amp and it was just like,
what's going on?
And then I put a record on it.
That's
goes
an interference.
Away.
Yeah. But some turntables actually tie earth ground to the negative outputs of the cartridge.
Oh, and, not
and
to
this
like
is
the motor.
So that you don't have to have like a ground cable. Okay, so some turntables, you don't have that ground cable, you do.
Right, some you
do. Well, the ones that you don't have the ground cable, they're grounding the negative output of the cartridge to ground.
Is that
on the turntable side? Well, it doesn't give you that much flexibility. Huh. It simplifies the setup, but it doesn't give you that much flexibility as far as trying to cut ground loops if you have them.
If you have them.
Because it's a fixed grounding situation where you can't change anything.
Try to touch it to something to see.
Yeah,
you can't
do anything because it's already grounded to the turntable's ground. So, that's just another scenario where you have a turntable and you have a phono preamp. Sometimes you have to mess around with the grounds to get to get it right. I mean, especially with a phono preamp, because if you have any sort of loop,
it's just, well, I mean, it's just going to be so much.
So yeah, and yeah. Especially at low frequency, you have crazy amounts of right, up to 90 dB because of
the rea curve. Yeah,
yeah. So so you know, ground loops okay. are you know, they're a hassle, and it's complicated, and there's no way that we could ever, you know, point out every scenario, but. If you're currently having a ground loop issue, you know, feel free to email us and perhaps we can debug something on the air for you.
Yeah, there's a lot of information on the internet. Do a little research first. Yeah.
And we've also, you and I have debugged a lot of ground loop scenarios in the field. So there's a lot that we can talk about as far as if you give us enough information about the system, about the components in the system, how do you have them connected? Okay. Right. Single-ended or balanced?
Right.
Do you have them connected to the same outlet or different outlets in the room?
Right.
Okay, that's another one.
Those are the first two questions, basically.
Do they have XLR outputs that you're not using?
Right.
Because, you know, you want to try balance. If you're struggling with ground loops and your components are balanced components, but you're using them single-ended, but you just don't have the...
Because you got nice cables,
because you have nice balance or single-ended cables... you know, you might want to try to make the switch to balance because
sell them.
It will fix the issue. And a lot of times, you know, they sound better balanced anyways.
Yeah. So yeah, I've heard a lot of devices that I listen to both and always go back to the balanced and end up listening to it on
that. Well, balance is also rejecting frequencies outside of the audio band.
Yeah.
It still has common mode rejection outside of that.
We have done an entire episode on balanced audio. It's called To Balance or Not to Balance. That is a question. We've done an episode on, single-ended triode amps, but we talk about single-ended stuff a little bit. So, you know, this is one of those topics that we really needed to hit, and I'm glad it occurred to us today to... talk about it. So.
Yeah. So let us know if you're having issues.
Yep.
Nobody wants hum. Don't live with hum.
Hi-fi it's not worth outlook.com. Life's not fun when you've got the hum.
I think that's the name of the show.
Yeah, that's our show. All right. Thanks for that. Thanks for listening. I think it's time for the album of the week. Yes. All right. Are we going with the one that I was talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We like to bring some diversity to this section of the podcast. We talked a little bit about it last week in terms of what our qualifications are. We felt we were getting a little heavy on the jazz lately.
Yeah, we had an amazing jazz album too.
But great jazz albums. Oh, I know. There's a really good one we want to share. It's fine.
Yeah.
One of the things too that we started talking about a little bit just today, just a little bit, is how... married people are to their type of music and how we attempt as audiophiles to bridge these gaps between us and between our two systems over the audiophile hobby, we try over music, but sometimes it can be the fact that like it's harder to connect over music than it is over maybe technically good recordings or like just the audiophile hobby in general. So we try to be sensitive to everybody and give a bunch of genres, whatever kind of spread we can do. One of the things that we like to do, since we're both really focused on the electronic music scene, the modern electronic music scene, is show a little spotlight every now and then on some segments of this world that is not in the typical audiophile, you know, lexicon or library. We were talking a little bit about it and you talk to a bunch of audiophiles, maybe your average audiophile, and you say, you know, what electronic artists are you into? And Brian Eno comes up a lot, you know, and Brian did so much great stuff, years ago, but there's just been so much going on in the electronic world. I've talked about how, I really think that electronic production is borderline audiophile music these days. The digital audio workstation technology is better than ever. The fact that with synthetic originated music, you never go through two conversion processes. You never go through the analog to digital converter and then the digital back to analog. like you do in a bunch of recording processes.
That's a really big deal.
It's a huge deal.
It's a really big deal.
And it explains why there's this clarity to electronic music that's produced well.
Yeah, the A to D conversion, there's tons of loss there that can happen.
And we're learning it more the more I think that I think about this as I'm listening to well-recorded or well-produced electronic music.
Yeah.
Not always recorded. This album features someone we've mentioned before, but also someone we have not. And I wanted to, there's a 3-song EP by a duo. This is just a collaboration that I've never seen before. This two artists getting together, making an EP of a 3-song EP. This is Anomaly and Chromio. And as always, for anyone listening, you visit our website and I stopped it. It's just a lag. I accidentally pressed play. If you visit our website, www.thehifipodcast.net, I will update the website and you'll be able to see this album and go find it yourself on streaming platforms. It's out everywhere. But essentially, Anomaly and Chromio came out with a collaboration EP last December, something like that. I've got the original one in my library. Just awesome. It's actually, there's some production in here. The track number 2 of the 3-song EP is so incredible. It's one of those eye poppers that you put on for people who are not familiar with an audiophile system or something, but you think like this kind of music, and it's just, it's wide and deep. It's a lot of audiophile things, but it's just so in your face and just kind of cool in the way that it gets laid out and wide and deep or whatever. I could just keep calling it that. I loved this EP. I've been listening to it, but it's only 3 songs. So I figured, well, I probably shouldn't bring it to the group. You know, we like to give you a whole bunch of stuff to chew on and, you know, historically we've done full albums. But today, the deluxe version of this album was released, and what that involves is very interesting. It is the 3 songs that are on the original EP, but there are also 6 remixes. So here's a little bit of a window into the electronic world that we thought we'd bring to you today is the idea of remixes and that possibility that electronic music only provides. I mean, you can say, okay, you and I enjoy our Booker T and the MGs take on the Abbey Road.
Oh yeah, that's great.
Yeah, and it's killer. And they did that the same year. So basically they heard Abbey Road and they were like, oh, we got to do that. And then they released it. So it was almost instantaneous because it came out like same year or something, their album. And it's a really cool take on the stuff. And what it is it's just a awesome musician being wildly influenced by another awesome musician. That awesome musician wants to pay homage. They think their fans would be interested to hear this take, right? So it's new art, right? That's what is going on all the time in the electronic world.
Yeah. And that's happened for a long time.
And
actually,
it's easier than rearranging. It's just, here's some of the backing tracks. Why don't you just actually use the actual song in your creation, right? Take it somewhere else.
Yeah, it's been happening for a very long time. Like back in the day, Rory Orbison actually came out with a song that influenced Elvis.
Oh, really?
You would think it would be the other way around, but actually Elvis heard this track and was just like, what the heck?
Now, did he remix it? Did he arrange it in his own way?
No, he just made a song that kind of sounds like it. That was an Elvis song.
I just love that, though. That whole world of artists influencing artists. You know, your art made such an impact on me. I'm going to take my free time and make new art to try to impact you, is this expression. you know?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it happens, even in electronics, it happens. Like, someone puts out something.
Well, it's so easy in electronics.
That they love, like a speaker maybe even, and
oh,
and they get influenced, you know, and wow, the speaker's amazing. Yeah, the...
well, that's true.
I'm trying to find the song that was influenced. I think it was... which one was it? I think it might have been Only the Lonely.
Only the Lonely? Interesting.
Yeah, it might have been that. I think so, it was. That, and then Elvis actually came back with some other song that's not named that, of course, but that sounded like it, you know? So this has been going on for a very long time where artists just get, you know, influenced by something, they hear something, and they're just like, wow, I need to do something like that.
Well, you know? Here's where electronic music takes that further. Because you have guys like Elvis and guys who can rearrange something and rearrange it in their own style. What electronic music does gives you the possibility of totally putting things on its own head, because there's a little bit of a psychological trick when you take some of the original tracks of the original, so that someone who heard the original then hears this, they recognize certain elements of the original that put themselves mentally back there, and then you've got your new art on top of that.
You can go out further. You can venture out further and still have some sort of tie back to it.
That's what has been done on this album. There's several of these tracks are incredible because they take new chords and find similarities on the circle of fifths and the kind of, like, you know, different keys that work together, and they're trying these things where you have a different bass key and a different fundamental key, and then you're applying this original sample that's in a totally different key entirely, but it actually, like, works most of the time. There's a couple of moments of that where you're just like, I'm just, like, very impressed by the creativity of where these people take this original tune and the main hook and the melody and the vocals supplied by Chromeo, and they might slow it down. And anyway, so I'm going to recommend the deluxe version of this album, which is called Bend the Rules. And the final three tracks are the original EP. So if you, I think it's worthwhile to just, if you pull this up, go right to the last three tracks, start with On My Mind, then Bend the Rules, then Champ de Mars, and just listen to those three, get a feeling for what this original EP was, and then start from the beginning. Listen to these really crazy creative remixes, which also showcase a few different styles in the current, you know, electronic music landscape. I really love the one by Brain Tan, track 4. I love the first one by Mind Sign.
Brain Tan.
Yeah, and they're all doing this track, Bend the Rules. I did it again, man. Anyway, it was quicker that time. Nice and responsive. I love Rune. I'm just looking at my Rune remote, so apologies for that music. But anyway, that is our album of the week. Do you have any parting thoughts on that?
I have not really digested the album. So
no, I brought it to you. I played it a bit, but I
will, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's not. It's fascinating, I think. It's good musical content, and then it's also very interesting look at what's going on right now, and I think it's quite enjoyable. So
cool.
Well, thanks to everybody for listening. Hope the discussion on Ground Loops was useful to some. Again, our email address is hi-fi@outlook.com if you want to reach out to us. But with that, this has been another Hi-Fi podcast with Darren and Duncan. I'm Duncan.
I'm Darren.
And we'll catch you next week.
Bye.
The Hi-Fi Podcast with Darren and Duncan is produced by Darren Myers and Duncan Taylor and is copyright 2020 of Slope Productions. The intro and outro music is provided by Denver's Color Red Studios and features the song Bangs by the band Many Colors.